Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As the 2018 midterm elections approach, one closely watched race will be the open congressional seat here in Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. And for the first time in recent memory, there are very competitive primaries for both Republicans and Democrats as the August 28th runoff approaches. This week and next on Studio Tulsa, we'll hear from the candidates vying for their party's nomination to represent the Tulsa area and Washington County in the next Congress. Today and tomorrow, we'll hear from Democratic challengers, and next week, we'll be hearing from the Republican candidates. Tomorrow, we'll speak with Tim Giltman. Today, my guest is Amanda Douglas, who finished second in the five-candidate field in the primary in June with 32.4% of the vote. This is Douglas's first attempt at holding public office. She's a native Oklahoman, a graduate of Glenpool High School and Oklahoma State University, and is a business analyst and consultant in the energy sector. She joins us today to discuss her reasons for running and her priorities if elected. Amanda Douglas, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
What made you decide to run for Congress?
Well, my daughter was born in July of 2016, and so I thought I was bringing my daughter into a world where we were about to elect the first female president. I was a Bernie supporter in the primary, and then I supported Hillary during the general election. And, you know, I pushed her in her baby carriage through the line at the election polling place. And then, I mean, we all know what happened in November of 2016. And, you know, after becoming a mother, I wanted to see my daughter grow up in a world where she could get an excellent education, where she could grow up with a clean environment and a kind and just world. The same things that any parent wants for their child. And I have to say, unfortunately, what I've seen since she's been born has been the opposite of that. I've seen education, particularly in Oklahoma, sink even further into the hole that it's been in for decades. I've seen environmental protections being rolled back, and I've seen now these human rights atrocities that are happening in this country that I didn't think were possible in my lifetime. So all of those things together are what made me look into running. When I found out that nobody had announced yet to run for this office, I was a little disappointed. But then a little more research revealed that nobody had run as a Democrat for this office for the previous two races. So this race was essentially being decided in the Republican primary, which means if you're not a registered Republican in Oklahoma, you have no say in who's representing you whatsoever. And that did not sit well with me. So I put it out to my friends and family, and I said, okay, I'm thinking about doing this. If you would support me, if you think I have the skills and the courage and the determination to make this happen, then donate some money. And if we can raise this $1,000, because it is $1,000 to run for office.
So you were talking about raising the money for your filing fee.
Yes, for my filing fee, because I'm a working mother. We're a single income family. My husband stays at home with our daughter. So this was not a financial undertaking that someone of our means would normally be able to undertake. So I put it out there. I said, if we can raise this money by April 1st, because April 13th was the filing deadline. So I said, if we can raise this money by April 1st, then I will file and I will run. And that was February 22nd. And we raised that $1,000 in, I want to say, a little over 48 hours. It was less than 3 days, and we had raised that. And I had set this deadline far in the future because I was thinking this was not going to happen. And people just came out of everywhere supporting the idea of somebody like them getting into office and representing what they want and what they need, because it's such a politically charged time right now. And so many people are excited and interested in politics for the first time that it's just it's a wonderful time to be a person trying to run for office.
So you view yourself as an every person who's going to try to be a Mr. or Mrs. Smith or Miss Smith goes to Washington.
Absolutely. Actually, yeah, I made my husband pull that movie up so we could watch it the other night. I love Jimmy Stewart, so that wasn't a hard sell. But yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people are sick of the screaming match, the shouting match that is our legislative body right now in Washington. And we're at a gridlock because nobody is willing to listen or compromise or look for ways to move forward. Everybody's just trying to advance their own party's agenda. And so a big thing that I like to say is I want to put people before party, because I am a Democrat. I'm running to be the Democratic candidate for this race, but I live my life surrounded by people with differing political ideals. My husband is a registered Republican. My mother is a Republican. My brother is a Republican. My other brother-in-law is a Republican. I'm all over the place. So I have to spend my life, and like a lot of Oklahomans do, getting along with people who have differing ideals than us. And I think the average politician sort of gets stymied in the party ideals, and they get blinders on because they're constantly surrounded by people who agree with them and who want the same things that they want. I think it's time that somebody who has actually lived the life of a real Oklahoman and knows what it's like to have to compromise and find solutions and make sacrifices when it's necessary to go and help make those legislative moves towards progress.
I want to ask you, that I can imagine there are many first-time members of Congress who go in with that same attitude, but the institution is pretty strongly towards party identity. What are you going to do when you run into your own party who's saying, look, you have to do this, or you're willing to compromise, but say the people on the other side of the aisle are unwilling to compromise? What do you do then?
Yeah, to answer the first part of the question, running into my own party, I totally understand that concern, because there have to be more people that join Congress thinking, I'm going to go in and I'm going to make a difference. But I think it's unfortunately been more isolated in the past. You get those occasional people who are altruistic and want to make a difference, but it's sort of drowning in this sea of career politicians, people who go to Congress not to make their state better or to make the lives of their constituents better, but to further their own political aspirations and careers and, you know, bottom line, their own wealth. So I think what advantage we have right now is that there is such a, you know, what they're calling the blue wave. There's such a movement right now towards, I don't care how things have been done in the past. We're here to change how things are done. And there's strength in numbers. I mean, we've got so many women, even with these really democratic socialist leaning agendas, are getting such huge followings. Deb Haaland in New Mexico, Alexandria Cortez
in New York.
In New York, yes. Mm-hmm. Stacey Abrams in Georgia, Sharice Davids in Kansas. It just goes on and on. And so I see it as this whole class of new Congress people who are going to come in together and say, look, we have to make a team. We have to come together and say, we're not going to do things the way you've always done things, because it's not getting anything done.
Let me ask a next question. If you could accomplish one thing in Congress, if you're elected to Congress, what would be it? What would be that top priority?
My dream?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of two different. My top political priority is public education.
Okay.
But if I could make any change, if I could, make a wish come true, it would be to lessen the importance of fundraising and increase the importance of the actual legislative work that our politicians do while they're in office.
That's a reality of life in Washington. Most of the time, any congressman spends a good portion of their day not in the Capitol, but in these little calling rooms mm-hmm. about two blocks from the Capitol mm-hmm. where they're making calls, raising money. And if they don't raise money, it's not just a matter of their own seat is in jeopardy, but their place in committees, because the party expects the congressperson to raise money as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. As soon as you arrive for orientation in December, yeah. the question is, what are you going to do by March 31st? How much are you going to have raised by March 31st? And that attitude is pervasive throughout the term of the congressperson. So you have a 2-year term and you spend the majority of the 2 years running to keep your office at the end of that 2 years. And here's where I want to draw a distinction between myself and other politicians. This has never been a goal of mine to run for office. I don't have political aspirations beyond helping my state so that my daughter can grow up in a good place and that all the other children of Oklahoma can grow up in a good place, and that our country gets back on the track that I want it, that we want it to be on. And I think that's a big difference between motivation for me running and motivation for some other politicians running, because they're looking at their own benefits out of it. And for me, that's not what it's about. And I think motivation plays a big role in how successful you are, too.
All right. Well, let's talk about some issues. You mentioned education, public education. It's at the heart of your platform. I know that. And while education, we think, is mostly a state and local issue, there are aspects that are controlled by the federal government, and certainly ways funding comes to the states and local educational districts comes through the federal. What federal actions would you advocate for towards education in the state?
You're right that most people do look at that as a state-level issue, and so I try to explain why it's important from the federal level to work hand-in-hand. From the federal level, a lot of people may not be aware of this, but in President Trump's February budget proposal, he cut $3.5 billion from Title I funds that goes towards, specifically towards low-income and special needs students. So that's something that I would immediately want to have reinstated, that funding. Secondly, there was another $1 billion of that earmarked towards voucher programs, which are a way of funneling more money away from public education and into private and parochial institutions. And thirdly, and I feel very strongly about this, is that I want to advocate for the replacement of Betsy DeVos as the Secretary of Education. I have yet to meet a single Oklahoman who was in support of or happy about her installation in that position, I guess. But, you know, at the same time, both of our Oklahoma senators voted to confirm her. So it's just another example of our representatives not representing what the people actually want, but just following their party lines.
Is it a matter of her reputation as a defender of charter schools and advocacy of charter schools, or is it things she's actually done in office?
I think the advocacy of charter schools is just a symptom of the bigger issue, which is that she's not qualified to make these kind of decisions because she's never had any experience with a public school system. She didn't attend one. She, you know, her children never did. So I don't think she's qualified for the position. And I don't think no matter what funding we get back and what changes we're able to make to improve the amount of money that the education department has, if the wrong person is in charge who isn't qualified to decide how that money is spent, then we're not going to be any better off than we are right now.
My guest today is Amanda Douglas. She is a business analyst and a consultant in the energy sector. This is her first attempt at elected office. She is in the Democratic runoff for the nomination for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. That runoff date is August 28th, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as we talk to the people vying to be the next congressperson from the 1st Congressional District. Let's talk about some other issues. Immigration, you mentioned human rights abuses along the border earlier. The House has been unable to pass any sort of immigration bill, even a simple protection for Dreamers, as well as the administration's ideas of more border security. What would go into an ideal immigration bill in your view?
Well, I want to say that as a mom, I think that seeing the images that we saw of what's going on the border was heartbreaking. I think any parent can relate to that. I think any immigrant who comes to this country, whether they're seeking asylum or whether they're seeking just a better life for themselves and their families, should be treated with dignity and respect. And that's not happening right now. I would like to see a much simpler and less time-consuming path to citizenship. I believe this country is full of native citizens and immigrants. And a lot of immigrants came here with their families looking for a better life. And I think that we should hold true to the roots of our country in that way. I would like to see that simpler path to citizenship for those who want to come to this country. And I believe that if we do implement that, then we'll see a lot less of this dangerous, illegal, undocumented crossing into the country. And as a result of that, we'll require less funding for these giant agencies to enforce these laws ICE.
So are you talking about more liberal limits on who can come to the country legally, or are we talking about once they have a green card or a way to be in the country legally, a quicker path than the typical 5-year process to become a citizen?
Right. And it's a quicker path than that for the typical citizen, but also with relation to the Dreamers that you mentioned.
Yeah.
There are people that are in this country that don't even remember when they were brought here from Mexico. My niece's father was brought here when he was 8 years old, and he had no say in the matter. But by the time, you know, by the time he was old enough to know that it was illegal, he had already been in the country for, you know, this was the only place he'd ever known.
Yeah, probably when they go to get a driver's license or
right,
something like that.
Exactly,
yeah.
As a teenager. So he was very lucky in that he was granted amnesty under the 1986 by Ronald Reagan.
The last big immigration bill.
Yes, yeah. So he was granted amnesty under that, and then he was able to accelerate his naturalization process by serving in the Marine Corps. He served 10 years in the Marine Corps. He's a wonderful guy. He's an amazing American citizen. And, you know, he was brought here without any say in the matter, but undocumented.
And you have a new generation the same way with the Dreamers today.
Right. And so there are some of these families where these men or women are being taken out of their families and deported to Mexico when they were the breadwinner for that family. And so not only is this person being sent to a country that they don't remember, they don't know anything about or know anybody there, but their family is left behind now without that source of income. And they, being American citizens then, end up on our, you know, our programs to help with people who need income assistance. So we're essentially creating this drain on our own revenue sources by deporting these hardworking immigrants who were brought here, you know, without any say in the matter.
Yeah. Well, as you well know, the impasse has been, I think most sides are saying they want protection for the Dreamers, but they're wanting restrictions in legal immigration, big restrictions in legal immigration, chain migration, the idea of a family member coming to this country and then bringing over the rest of the family. Of course, border wall and more protections, the Trump administration's asking. If you were asked to vote on a bill that would offer protections for Dreamers and maybe changes for all undocumented immigrants, could you vote for a bill that would also have those restrictions in legal immigration or border wall security?
It would have to be a significant win for me to vote for a border wall, and I'll tell you why. The first major world event that I remember as a kid was watching the Berlin Wall come down. And I was six. I think I was 6 years old. About 88, 89. I was
89.
Seven. I was seven.
Okay.
So I know. I know that definitely like puts me in a different perspective for a lot of listeners, I'm sure. So I watched that wall coming down and the jubilation and the joy and my parents telling me that this is such a huge deal. And I remember at 6, 7 years old thinking, who thought it was a good idea to, why did they think building a wall between two countries was a good way to settle their differences? You know, I thought it was ridiculous as a first grader. So that's how I feel about the border wall. You know, I feel like it's a huge waste of taxpayer revenue. It's not going to be effective. I find the idea ridiculous.
My guest today is Amanda Douglas, who is running for the Democratic nomination for the Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. The runoff is August 28th, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk a little bit about health care. Affordable Care Act is still in place, but the Trump administration has put a number of roadblocks in. Basically, I think the president said he would like to see the ACA explode, and they put a number of hurdles, freezing the premium adjustment program, which helps higher income individuals that are on the marketplace with their premium, declining to defend the ACA in lawsuits, easing pre-existing condition restrictions for insurers. What would you like to see be done on the health care? Is it about fixing the Affordable Care Act in the places it doesn't work well and completely funding it? Or would you rather see something completely different in healthcare?
I really was in favor of the Affordable Care Act when it passed. I think Obama did some amazing things and made incredible progress by passing that. It was a huge healthcare, you know, reform bill. But I think there have been so many stumbling blocks. I mean, from the very first day of the marketplace website not functioning properly, all the way till now with the Trump administration, as you said, placing hurdle after hurdle in the way of this program's success, that I don't know if we can salvage it at this point. And I think that's unfortunate because I think it was a step in the right direction. However, the way I would like to go and what I advocate is the Medicare for All initiative. I was not a believer until not too long ago. I sat through a presentation and somebody actually explained to me the amount of waste, administrative waste in our healthcare system. Somebody said this
through the private insurance community.
Yes, well, in doctors' clinics, in private insurers, in hospitals. Somebody said this statistic to me: there are, on average, more AR and AP employees in a hospital than there are beds in that hospital, which is insane. And so, when all of these expenses in processing these multi-payer claims that we deal with right now with private insurers is creating a huge amount of revenue waste. And so once you actually eliminate all that and you go to a single payer system, you suddenly see, oh, we're saving this many billion dollars versus what it's going to cost to implement this system. And not to mention, I mean, Medicare has been successful in this country for the better part of a century in the U.S. now. And I think that we can build on that. If we expand Medicare, then we stabilize the risk pool, because you're bringing in younger people who aren't necessarily going to get as sick as often as the over 65 crowd right now. And you stabilize that risk pool, and you're able to get that preventative care that people need, so that we reduce the number of people that end up going to the emergency room for something that could have been handled at a doctor's clinic because they didn't have insurance, and so they wouldn't go. So it's a cleaner way of everybody, paying a reasonable amount of money for getting great health care, as opposed to some people getting great health care and then everybody else just being out of luck.
Let me ask you, right now as we speak, the Trump administration has put a number of tariffs on a number of industries, starting with China, but it's expanded to Canada and Mexico, to the European Union. And a lot of people are looking at this as an idea that we're going to be in a trade war. House Speaker Ryan was asked whether Congress would use its authority that's granted under the first article of the Constitution that says that they can take tariff authority from the president. He says no, because it will just be vetoed. What is your view on Congress's roles in with these tariffs in place and the idea of America being in a trade war?
I'm not excited about the idea of being in a trade war. I certainly don't think that they are easily winnable. I'm concerned about what we're already seeing as a result of these tariffs. When it was first announced, for instance, the tariffs on the washing machines and appliances that first were made, I could understand the application of that tariff, because the idea, as Trump supported it, as he presented it to his base, was that it was going to keep more jobs here in the U.S. because we wouldn't be importing appliances from abroad. But as these tariffs have expanded and more things have been added, and against countries that are our allies, I think it's gotten out of hand to the point where it's going to be difficult, not impossible, but difficult for it to be undone, which I think is what will end up happening. We're in a society right now where each political party just waits its turn for its time to be in power, and then undoes whatever the last party did, and then pushes forward their own agenda and lather, rinse, repeat. My hope is that, as I said earlier, that with this new class of, fresh and idealistic, and you can say naive, but it's not naive if you make it happen. With this new class of Congress people coming in and really making a change in how we approach things.
Now, if you happen to be elected to be the first district congressman from Oklahoma, it's probably going to be that wave election you're talking about, and Congress may revert to a Democratic majority in 2019. Mm-hmm. As a member of the majority, what do you think the Democrats' first priority ought to be?
Oh, gosh, that's hard, because there's been so much happen in the last, I think foreign policy would have to be addressed very quickly.
Where we're alienating allies?
Exactly. So, yes, exactly. Where we've alienated the allies that we have in the past, we need to repair those relationships.
Even with President Trump still in the Oval Office?
I think you have to start fighting as soon as possible. The promise that a lot of representatives are making right now in campaigns like mine is that we're going to go down there and change things. We don't like how things have been done in the past, and we're going to make a difference. And I think that has to happen the minute we walk in the door.
Well, let me ask you, the House of Representatives have responsibility for bringing articles of impeachment. Philosophically, now I'm not talking about any particular person at this point, but what is your view on the impeachment of public officials? When and under what circumstances should it be used?
Well, I think anytime you're public official can be proven to have taken action or made statements that were in direct contradiction of the nation's best interests, then that would be the time to bring articles of impeachment. And I will say that I think President Trump has met that criteria. When that question was originally posed to me at the beginning of my campaign, my answer would be, I'm not really sure, because do you want Mike Pence in the White House? Because we have to realize that is the consequence of, you know, impeaching President Trump, is that Mike Pence would. And now there's so much that happens every day in every single news cycle that just adds to my fears about what's going to happen in the future, and my anxiety about the world, that I can say that I would vote to impeach Trump at this point, because I think Mike Pence is the devil we don't know versus the devil we know. And I think the devil we know at this point is just getting worse every day.
My guest today is Amanda Douglas. She is a business analyst and consultant for the energy sector, and she is running for the Democratic nomination for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. She is in the runoff on August 28th. And when voters go back to the poll on August 28th, Amanda, why should they choose you?
Well, I think the main difference between me and who you may have voted for in the past is that I am a lot like you. Like I said, I'm a working mom. I come from a single income family. We work really hard for what we have, and sometimes we have to struggle. And I think it would be really great for the people of Oklahoma to have a representative in office who's been where they are and who understands what it's like to, you know, only have a few cents in the checking account and it's still 3 days until payday. Who are worried about their kids and the state of the schools that their kids are going to be going into. I've got a vested interest in making sure that the education in this state gets turned around, because I have a 2-year-old daughter and I can't afford private schools. So I not only have a vested interest, I have a deadline. I hope that the people of Oklahoma are as tired of what they have seen out of the same politicians over and over as I am, and that they're ready to elect somebody who's going to change things and really make a difference in Oklahoma and in the United States.
Well, Amanda, thank you very much for your time. It's
a
pleasure
to
meet
you. Thank you so much.
Amanda Douglas is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District, as we begin a series of conversations here on Studio Tulsa with the candidates vying for the nomination. The runoff election is coming up on August 28th. If you'd like more information on today's candidate, you can visit their website at amandadouglasforcongress.com. Tomorrow, we'll be speaking with her primary opponent, Tim Gilpin, and next week we'll be hearing from the Republican candidates vying for their nomination as well. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.